Harper Audio presents I Am Number 4, The Lost Files, Zero Hour, Legacies Reborn, Last Defense, and Hunt for the Guard, by Pittacus Lore. Performed by Paul Bamer, Kyla Garcia, Merritt Hicks, Brian Slayton, and Lucian Dodge. Legacies Reborn.
Chapter 1. As usual, Benny is an ass, and I can't keep my mouth shut. Lunch had been going okay. We'd walked to the diner a few blocks down from our apartment. Everybody in Harlem seemed to be out on the streets, enjoying the first warmish day in weeks. Mom looked radiant in her crisp white button-down. She's always been able to make her work clothes look fashionable, instead of like something she was forced to wear while serving fancy customers at a restaurant down on Wall Street that we could never afford to eat at. Benny, my stepdad, was quiet most of the meal, except for a groan here or there. Based on his swollen eyes, I'm guessing he had a little too much fun out with his boys last night. All in all, things had been smooth sailing. Then I had to go and ask if I could get some new headphones. Nice noise-canceling ones that'd block out the world around me. Or at least the noises in our apartment. That seemed worth $50 to me. The request doesn't go over well. "Sure, baby," Mom says as she tries to nab the last grape from a side of fruit salad with her fork. Benny looks like she's just agreed to buy me a Lexus for my 16th birthday or something.
"Hold up now," he says. "What's wrong with the ones you've got?"
"They're busted," I say, pointing to the headphones slung around my neck. "Only one ear works."
"Then deal with one ear,"
Benny says. He wolfs down the last bite of a burger.
"Your mom works 6 shifts a week. Sometimes more. I support us, too. What do you do?"
I almost laugh at the word support. Benny's been off work for a few months now, on paid disability, even though I haven't seen anything wrong with him. It definitely hasn't stopped him from drinking beer all day while shouting at our TV, driving me crazy. "I put up with you," I mutter, staring down at the half a waffle floating around a little syrup lake on my plate.
"Danny," Mom says. "What'd you just say?"
Benny asks, his voice a low boom. I bite my tongue. For Mom's sake, I keep quiet.
"She's having a great semester in school," Mom says.
"Lord, I'll pay for the headphones. Don't worry."
"Oh, really? Where's this money coming from, then?"
he asks. "Benny, don't spoil the meal. You know I set aside a little tip money for things like this." "At least she works," I say. It slips out before I can stop it. Benny snorts, and I can tell I've crossed the line. When he speaks again, his voice is deep and full of anger.
"Listen here, you spoiled little—"
"Benjamin!" Mom cuts him off. He looks back and forth between us, jaw flexing as he clenches his teeth. Benny's pretty much always an asshole, but it's when he gets quiet and silently rages that I know I've hit some kind of nerve. I haven't seen him look this angry in a long time, and that's saying something, considering we never see eye to eye on anything. My body tenses up with anger. I want to hurl my plate at him or flip this whole table over. I wish I could do something. He stands up abruptly, his knees banging against the table and causing our plates to rattle. On his feet, he's a behemoth, 6'2" and thick from years of manual labor and Mom's cooking. A couple of people look over at us, And Mom puts on a smile to show them that everything's all right.
You got so much spare cash lying around, then you won't mind paying for this shit,
Benny says, waving at our table. And then he's off and out the door. Mom slowly takes her napkin from her lap and dabs her lips.
You want dessert, baby?
She asks. I shake my head and suck my teeth, looking across the room at nothing in particular. If I look at Mom, I'll apologize for what I said and take responsibility for starting the argument. And I don't want to be sorry. She shrugs and glances at her phone. I gotta get down to the restaurant. My shift starts soon. I'd hate for those rich-ass bankers to have to pour their own drinks.
Language, Danny, she says.
Then she smirks. Besides, those rich-ass bankers are the ones buying you a black and white. And before I can protest, she's up and across the diner, chatting with our waitress at the bar, as the woman makes me a to-go milkshake. I walk Mom to her train. We cut through Morningside Park, which is kind of crowded because of the nice weather. There are all sorts of families grilling and having picnics, a bunch of kids playing pickup basketball on the courts. We don't really talk. Mom just hums some song I don't recognize, and I try to cool off. We've done this a million times. Walking beside her always makes me feel better, no matter what's been going on at home or at school. But we can't spend all day strolling around. Eventually, she has to leave. We come to the subway entrance.
Text me which headphones you want, and I'll go pick them up, she says.
It'll be our little secret. Until Benny finds out, I say. He won't. He's not exactly the most observant guy. He'll forget all about them by tomorrow. Maybe we'll do something fun if the weather stays. Just you and me. I've got the day off. This is what it should always be like. We don't need anybody else in the world except each other. We'd be better off alone.
Danny, she says.
It's true. We were fine before he came along.
Not always, baby, she says. You're forgetting he's the reason we can afford to stay in our apartment.
If that's all it is, then I can get a job, I say. I'm almost 16. We can get along just fine without him. She smiles, but I don't think it's because I've just come up with some brilliant solution to our problems. We've had this conversation 100 times before.
He's a good man,
she says slowly, patiently.
He's just going through a rough patch.
As far as I'm concerned, this rough patch has lasted for the last 3 years, ever since he moved in with us.
Besides, you need to be focused on school.
She smirks a little.
I'm going to find some SAT vocabulary lessons for you to listen to on those fancy new headphones to make sure you're putting them to good use.
I roll my eyes. She kisses me on the forehead, squeezing my shoulder gently.
I'll see you tonight, Danny, she says.
I love you.
Yeah.
I stare down at the concrete.
Later.
She lingers.
I love you too,
I say finally. She smiles and then disappears down into the subway. Thinking about going back to the apartment makes my blood start to boil again. And with Mom gone, there's no one left to keep me calm. I know from past experience that it'll be best if I give Benny a little while to cool down. Besides, I don't want to be stuck in my room avoiding my stepdad when it's so nice outside. So I walk for a while, until I finally come to the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. I cut through the groups of people snapping pictures outside, and go into the little park beside the church, where this weirdo statue of an angel and a bunch of giraffes stands. I think it's really called Peace Fountain, but I've always called it Big Crab,
because that's what all the animals and the winged man are standing on. A big crab. That's also what Mom called it when I was just a kid. And she used to take me on walks through the university campus nearby and talk about how if I worked really hard, I'd be one of the students there when I grew up. Now I come here when I want to get away from everything else. I grab a bench, stretch out my legs, and cross my arms, enjoying the feeling of the sun shining down on me. Music blasts from one ear of my headphones. I try to completely zone out. I don't know how much time passes before my phone starts to vibrate in my pocket, the music in my ear suddenly replaced by a ringtone. I sigh, fearing that it's Benny asking me where the hell I am, or if I'll run by the store and pick something up for him. But it's Mom. "Hey," I say when I answer. "I thought your shift start..." "Where are you?" She cuts me off. Her voice is short and on the verge of a yell. It startles me so that I don't answer at first. She continues. "Did you hear me? Where are you?" "At the big crab." "Go home." "Mom, what's..." "Danny, baby," she says. She sounds like she's about to start crying or something. "You need to go home. Right now. I'll be..." I don't hear what she says after that, if she says anything at all. There's some yelling, and then a loud bang. And suddenly our connection is gone. I try to call back, but I've got 0 bars. "What the..." I mutter, jumping to my feet. I pause for a few seconds, staring at my phone, my heart pounding against my ribs. I'm not exactly excited about going back to the apartment and spending the rest of the afternoon hearing Benny shout at sports teams. But Mom sounded so worried. The sky becomes overcast, and all of a sudden, I feel like something bad's going to happen. I keep hearing the concern in Mom's voice repeating through my head. I start to run towards home. As I dart through the park and pass the short blocks to our apartment, I can tell something's not right. I hear shouting from inside apartment buildings as I run past open windows. A couple of other people are sprinting through the streets in a hurry somewhere. I speed up, continuously checking my phone to see if I've gotten a message from Mom or something. Finally, I'm home. The metal security gate bangs behind me, loud, and I'm guessing every other apartment in our crappy building hears it. Someone yells from inside 1B as I run past the row of mailboxes in the entryway and then up the hard-worn stairs to our place on the 4th floor. I'm shaking as I try to get my key in the door, but I can't tell if it's because I'm completely out of breath and drained from running all the way here or because I'm so spooked by Mom's call. I start yelling as soon as I get inside. "Mom?" I ask. "Benny? What's going on?" Benny's in his big blue recliner. There are a couple of empty beers on the coffee table, and I'm hoping that means he's forgotten all about the headphones. "Benny, Mom just..." He shushes me, waving a hand in my direction, not taking his eyes off the TV, where a blonde boy with glowing fireballs in his hands is fighting a gross-ass giant. Anger builds up inside me. Benny is watching some crappy sci-fi movie while Mom might be in trouble or something. I'm about to start shouting at him when I recognize the United Nations on the screen. Then a reporter from one of the news stations Benny loves to yell at comes into frame. That's when I realize that this isn't some movie. It's live. Chapter 2. None of this seems real. A giant spaceship is hovering above Manhattan. It just rolled in out of nowhere. A freaking spaceship. I've tried to catch sight of it myself, but the only windows in our apartment face the building a few yards away from us, and all I can see when I look out are bricks and dirty glass, and the little alley below us. But it's all over the TV. We sit glued to the screen.
Benny keeps crossing himself and whispering prayers I didn't think he even knew. He's got a baseball bat in his lap and hasn't moved for hours. I split my time rocking back and forth on the couch and pacing through the living room, constantly checking both my and Benny's phones to see if either of them gets any service. We don't really talk to each other, except for when we hear a bunch of people running up to the roof. I start towards the front door, but Benny says, "Stay here," in a way that has my butt immediately back down on the couch. Besides, I keep waiting for the door to swing open and Mom to walk in. I don't want to be up on the roof when she does. Whatever this is, it's not just happening here in New York, but in cities across the world. Some are calling it an invasion. Others, war. None of it makes sense. It's impossible to wrap my head around it. The weird-ass aliens with laser guns they keep showing on TV have just got to be CGI. Or this is just some big viral marketing campaign for a movie or something. I remember learning in school about some old radio broadcast back in the 30s that was about aliens invading. People thought it was real, but it turned out to be a big hoax. This has to be like that, right? Or at least, that's what I keep trying to believe. If this is a joke, it's the best, most expensive damn joke in history. The news keeps showing footage taken from phones and tablets. I guess some people are managing to get a cell signal. A lot of it is shaky and blurry. Some of it's a little more high quality. A few stations start showing a video pulled from YouTube. It's got a girl doing a voiceover in it like some kind of PSA, and talks about the blonde boy I saw fighting on TV earlier. Apparently his name is John Smith. And how he's a good alien. And that a bunch of bad aliens are here to take over Earth. This is the craziest shit I've ever seen. Every time the security gate bangs, I jolt and stare at the door, hoping it's Mom. But it never is. The dozenth or so time I hear it, the clanging metal is followed by the sound of some guy screaming.
"Holy shit, they're here!"
His cries echo up the stairwell, through the building.
"They're on the block! They're on the block!"
I recognize the voice as the old man who sits on our stoop and sometimes talks to birds. I turn to Benny, but he just clicks his tongue and shakes his head a little.
"Dude's losing it," he says, not taking his eyes off the TV. "Those pale freaks ain't gonna bother with Harlem. We're safe here."
He turns the news up louder. The station we're watching is broadcasting live from Midtown, where most of the NYPD has been sent. It seems like the aliens are more concentrated there. Benny leans forward in his chair, muttering something I don't hear. Somewhere on our block, a few car alarms start to go off. Even though he may be convinced no aliens are coming to Harlem, I get up and tiptoe over to the front door, moving the little slider out of the way so I can see through the peephole and into the small landing. But there's nothing there. Just the two doors of the apartments across the hall, and the blinking light that's needed to be fixed for months now. Behind me, the reporter talks.
The Mogadorians,
she says, and I roll the word around in my head.
They have taken to the streets en masse, and appear to be, rounding up prisoners, although we have seen some further acts of violence at the slightest provocation.
Prisoners?
Jesus Christ,
Benny says. I keep my eye up to the peephole, trying to catch anything out of the ordinary. There's a huge bang downstairs, and the sound of wrenching metal, like the security gates being torn in half or something. I leap back from the door, screaming a little bit, and proceed to freak the F out.
"It's them!"
I say, louder than I mean to. My heart is suddenly pumping 1,000 beats a minute as I look around for some kind of weapon.
"Shut up!"
Benny says,
jumping out of his chair and muting the TV. I'm so scared that I hardly get angry at his words. When he sees my face, his expression softens, and he lowers his voice to a whisper.
I mean, keep quiet. Damn.
They're screaming somewhere downstairs, loud and panicked, terrified. My breath catches in my throat as I take 5 steps away from the door all at once and back into Benny. There's another scream, one that's cut off suddenly. I start to shake. My breath comes out in quivery gasps. Benny grips my shoulder and pulls me back. For a second, I think he's just dragging me away from the door. Then I realize he's trying to get me behind him.
Go hide,
he says, letting his arm fall away. I turn to him. There's something in his eyes I've never seen before. Fear.
Go on, he says.
I start to think of the few places I could try to hide in our apartment. Under my bed, the closet, and suddenly I feel like I'm 5 years old and playing games. But these alien freaks are definitely not playing. Our apartment is so small. If they want to find me, they will. The screams are getting louder, closer. They're moving up the floors. I can hear the doors being kicked in now, along with electronic noises like the ones we heard on TV. The sounds of their weapons. What the hell is happening? They're shouting now, right outside our apartment. Deep, bellowing orders to open the doors. I stand frozen in our living room. Benny takes his bat and walks slowly to the door, half on his tiptoes. He leans up against the corner in the entryway and raises the bat like he's ready to hit a homer. He glances back at me, and his face contorts into an expression I'm more familiar with coming from him. Anger.
Wake up, stupid, he says. Go!
He nods to the window on the other side of the living room, where the gauzy white curtains Mom loves are billowing out in the slight breeze. The fire escape. He wants me to make a run for it. I listen and bolt, and am halfway down to the next floor when I realize Benny is staying back to fend off the aliens and give me a chance to escape. He should be coming with me. What would Mom say if she found out I just left him behind? Oh, God, I hope she's safe. So I climb back up and stick my head through our living room window right in time to see our front door fly in. Any hope that these guys were only actors in really great makeup dies as 4 of the freaks stomp through the front door, all pale skin and jagged teeth and gross noses. There's no question that these are beings from another planet. And they're not happy. One of them sees me through the window, his black eyes narrowing. I duck down, hoping that none of the others notice me.
Surrender or die,
the alien says, in a deep, grating voice. Benny steps out of the corner and swings like a pro, slamming his bat into the alien's skull. The bastard falls hard to the floor and then disintegrates.
Just turns into freaking dust, like he's a damn vampire that's been staked or something.
But that's the only swing Benny gets. One of the aliens, Mogadorians, fires a laser gun at him, and Benny flies backwards a few yards before crashing through our coffee table. He convulses on the floor. I clamp my hands over my mouth. When Benny regains a little control of his body, he looks out the window. We lock eyes for a moment. Mine are wide, scared. His are pleading.
Run!
He shouts. And it looks like doing so causes him a ton of pain. Blood drips from his ears and nose.
Run, damn it!
And so I do. As I run down metal steps, I hear more of those electric noises coming from my apartment. Benny screams a few times. Then it gets really quiet. I pause on the ladder at the end of the fire escape.
I just want to hear Benny cursing at the aliens, or the sound of his metal bat hitting someone else's skull. Instead, I look up and find one of the pale-faced bastards hanging out of my living room window. He's got a gun pointed at me.
Shit, I exclaim.
But I never finish the curse. He fires and I just let go of the ladder. I'd rather take my chances falling to the ground than getting zapped by some alien's gun. The electric blast must come within inches of me, though, because as I fall, I can feel some kind of static shoot through my body. But then there's nothing but the rush of wind as I claw at the air, plummeting towards the ground below. I land in an open dumpster, saved by trash. I scramble out and stumble through the little alley between our apartment building and the one beside us, trying to make sense of the chaos around me. I pause at the corner and look out onto the street and my block. Some cars have been turned over. Alarms are going off everywhere. One of the alien spacecrafts I saw on TV is parked smack in the middle of the intersection at the end of the block. Across the street, half a dozen aliens lead a line of people out of an apartment building. People I recognize from the neighborhood. Men, women, kids. They're forced to drop to their knees with their hands in the air on the sidewalk. The Mogadorians keep poking at them with the barrels of their guns. I want to help them. Want to do something to save them. But I can't bring myself to move. I'm hardly even breathing, I'm so scared, and have to keep swallowing down the urge to puke. I feel like my heart is trying to burst out from inside of me. This must be what complete and utter fear feels like. Tears fill the corners of my eyes, but I'm not sure if they're for me, or Mom, or even Benny. It's only then that I realize he's the only reason I escaped. He distracted the aliens, tried to keep them from getting me. He didn't have to do that. Hell, he could have abandoned me altogether. But he didn't. He told me to run while he stayed behind. My stupid stepfather protected me, and it got him killed. For a second, there's a pang of guilt in my gut for every bad thing I ever said about Benny. But then I hear clanging coming from the alley. One of those pale bastards is starting down the fire escape, maybe chasing after me. So I whisper an apology to Benny, and to my neighbors on the sidewalk, and try to save myself. My legs start moving, running. I head away from the ship and the people lined up on the streets, and towards the park. If I can get across it, I might be able to reach the subway. Maybe the trains are still running and I can get downtown to Mom. I stay low and use the cars on my side of the street as cover. I make it past several other apartment buildings and the fire hydrant I used to play at during the summers when I was a kid. Water spews out of the broken hydrant onto a body that's lying on the sidewalk. A body that's not moving. I try not to look at it as I make my way around the corner, where I come across three aliens who have their backs to me. I'm so surprised that I trip over my own feet, twisting my ankle and hitting the ground hard. Hard enough that I can't help but let out a short cry. They turn. The one closest to me has dark tattoos along the top of his skull. He lets out a noise that sounds like sandpaper. It takes me a moment to realize he's laughing at me. I'm toast. I try to scramble to my feet, but the three of them are on me too fast. They train their guns at me, and I know that no matter how quick I move, I won't be able to get away from them. They'll shoot me if I run.
Surrender or die,
the Mogadorian says. I look around, but there's no one nearby to help. I can barely even see the people from my block anymore from where I am. I guess everyone's been rounded up, or is hiding, or... My eyes fall on the unmoving body by the hydrant. These aliens are going to kill me on my own damn block. The one closest to me bears his gray, jagged teeth in what might be considered a smile on Mars, or wherever the hell he came from. His finger on the trigger twitches. There's a sharp buzzing in my chest. I can hardly stand it.
I feel like someone's blown up a balloon inside me. The pain's so bad that I'm sure I'm about to be ripped apart. My heart thumps. This is the end. Mom, I'm sorry. I throw my hands up in front of my face to shield myself, as if that will do anything to protect me. And then, the impossible happens. Chapter 3. The aliens' guns fly out of their hands and through the air, clattering onto the street halfway down the block. What the? Something is different. Something inside me has changed. The buzzing has changed. Now I can sense it coursing through my veins. I feel powerful. I feel electric. And for a second, I wonder if I was actually shot with one of those laser guns. But that can't be true. I feel too alive. What the hell is going on? I don't know how to even begin to answer that question. The alien douchebags look just as confused as I am, and really pissed off. The one with the tattoos sneers and lunges for me. I push my hand out in front of me, hoping to stop him. His body shoots through the air, crashing through the windshield of an abandoned taxi that's on fire, a few buildings away from us. I look at my hands, and then to the two remaining Mogadorians. They take a few steps back. They're afraid of me. In spite of everything that's happened, I can't help but smirk at this. Who's laughing now? I ask as I get to my feet.
Guard,
one of the aliens says. I don't know what he means, and I don't really care. I feel like a puppeteer, like everything has invisible strings I can push and pull. I raise my hand above my head, and the alien on my left is thrust into the air. He lets out a deep growl. I don't have any damn clue what's happening to me. All I know is that these monsters attacked my city, my neighborhood, my family. I narrow my eyes and bring my hand down. The floating Mogadorian slams into his friend, and then I take him up in the air and hammer him down again, over and over, until the two of them fall apart, bursting into little clouds of ash. My hands shake. I stare down at them in disbelief, but I don't have time to try to make sense of this. More Mogadorians spill onto the street a few blocks away, shooting into a crowd of people who run after them. The humans have weapons of their own. They're coming at the invaders with guns, knives, hockey sticks, and bats. A few police officers head the charge in riot gear. Someone throws something that's smoking. There's the sound of glass breaking, and then one of the aliens goes up in flames. People are fighting back. I wonder if I should stay and try to protect my neighborhood. But the only thing I care about in the world right now is getting downtown to Mom. And so I break into a run, this time slightly less afraid, fueled by this new energy that's flowing through me. My brain feels like it's sparking, and all I can think is that if this is real, if I've got superpowers now, then I can still hope that she is okay. That we'll be reunited soon. It's not impossible.
Nothing is impossible.
Morningside Park is dark. Normally, it's not the kind of place I'd want to hang around at night, but I don't hesitate to sprint into it. All I have to do is climb a few flights of stairs and cross a few streets, and I'll be at the same train station where I said goodbye to Mom just a few hours ago. As soon as I get inside the park itself, though, I start to rethink my route. It seems like every bush is shaking, and I can hear whispers in the air around me. I tighten my fingers into fists as I run along. I'm almost to the stairs when suddenly there's a light in my face and someone pulling on the back of my shirt. My hands go up, and I'm ready to try to dust a few more of these pale suckers when I hear someone say,
"Be cool. It's just a kid."
"Who's there?" I ask, not letting my guard down. The light moves away, and after blinking a few times,
I realize that it's shining on a small group of people. Maybe 15 of them. Then, the light goes out.
Sorry, the person with the flashlight says. We thought you might be one of them.
Do I look like one of them? I ask. As my eyes adjust, I begin to see the boy holding the flashlight at his side. He's only a few years older than me, if that, and he can't stay still, his head and eyes darting around the park.
I have to go, I say, starting toward the stairs again.
The boy grabs my arm.
It's bad up there, he says. They're everywhere.
It's bad down here, someone in the group says. I'm not afraid, I say, shaking loose from his grip.
They came into our building, the boy says. My parents and a few others tried to hold them off in the front while we all made it out through the back. I don't know.
He trails off. I look back at the rest of the crowd. That's when I realize most of them are either pretty young or pretty old. Those who wouldn't have stood a chance against the Mogadorians.
We'll be safe here, a little girl says. Until help comes.
I wonder if that now includes me. If I'm the help. Before I can answer that question, another light is on me. On all of us. This time from the air, coming from one of those damn spaceships. Black masses jump from its sides. More aliens.
Run!
Someone shouts. And we do. We scramble up the stairs. Behind me, I can hear the electric sounds of their weapons. An older man is hit and falls. Flashlight boy grabs him, dragging him along. We keep going. We have enough of a start that we're halfway up the seemingly never-ending steps when they finally start to gain on us.
Go! Go!
I shout. But there's no way they can move any faster. Not this group. So I try to buy them some time to escape. I turn my attention to the Mogadorians. They're a few yards behind me, their boots smacking against the white stone steps.
What are you doing?
Flashlight boy shouts at me.
Saving you!
I yell back. Or getting myself killed.
Yo, ass faces!
I crack my knuckles.
You never should have messed with Harlem.
They raise their guns, but I'm faster. I push my hands forward. The aliens fly back, tossed through the air. One of them lands in a nearby pond. A couple more tumble down the steep steps. They must have bones because I can hear them breaking. One of them turns to dust halfway down. The other one disappears at the base of the stairs when he lands on his head. But I don't get them all. A big one somehow missed my magic Jedi attack and is still coming at me. His blaster raised and ready to fire. I reach out my hand and clench my fist. The alien stops, lifted off the ground by a giant invisible hand.
Yeah, sucker, I say. What you gonna do now?
He squirms in my grip, saying stuff in a language I've never heard, though it's pretty obvious that he's cursing at me. For some reason, I think about Benny's quiet prayers as we watched the news. And I think of my mom, who has to be all right and waiting for me at her restaurant. She has to be.
This planet has already fallen, he says in English.
I don't know if he's got a weird accent or if his voice just normally sounds like someone trying to make a gravel smoothie in a blender.
You can't win. Your people will bow before us when...
I throw my hand to my left. The alien flies, smashing into the rocky side of the embankment beside the stairs. He turns to dust before his body ever hits the ground. It's only then that I realize it's gotten really quiet behind me. I turn back and find a dozen eyes staring at me. Some of them are above gaping mouths. Others are wide with fear. I have no idea what to say.
You,
Flashlight Boy says. You're like the dude in the videos. John Smith.
Whoa, no, I say. I'm not with him.
Are you like a good alien?
Someone asks.
What? I live on 120th Street.
Everyone starts to whisper to each other. The murmurs quickly grow louder until everyone's trying to talk to me, thanking me or asking what else I can do, or telling me to go back to my own planet.
What now?
A little girl asks. Her eyes are wet and bloodshot. There's an explosion somewhere close, back from the direction my apartment is in. Or was in, maybe. The steps rattle beneath our feet. I don't know what to tell these people to do, but my mission is clear. I've got to get downtown. And if any of these shark-faced freaks get in my way, I'll destroy them, leaving mountains of dust behind me.
Chapter 4.
I run up the last of the stairs and out of the park. The others follow.
You're like a mutant or something,
Flashlight Boy says from behind me.
You've been exposed to some radiation or toxic waste or something?
Do you have a spaceship?
A girl asks, totally ignoring the fact that I already said I'm not some alien.
Why is this happening?
Another girl asks. She just keeps repeating the question over and over again. I don't say anything. Wouldn't know how to even try to answer these questions that don't make any sense to me either.
But that doesn't seem to matter to any of them.
They just keep on chasing after me, the younger ones sometimes slowing down a little bit to get the old-timers moving faster. I know that if this group stays on my heels, I'll never make it down to Wall Street and Mom, because there's no way I can avoid these alien bastards with 15 people hobbling after me. I've got to lose them. So I figure if I can find a good, safe hiding place or something, I can slip away and not feel bad about abandoning them. The only problem is that the safest place right now is probably in, like, Montana or Wisconsin or, I don't know, Antarctica or something. Just anywhere far enough from New York or other big cities. I know this neighborhood like the back of my hand, and my mind races trying to think of some kind of place they can hole up and wait for actual help from the army or whoever. I make for Columbia. Since the university is only a block away and has big metal gates at its entrances that at least look like they might be strong. But I don't even have to get close to the campus before I can see a small spaceship in the air over it and hear the shouts and sounds of those electric weapons firing. Some of the buildings are on fire. It sounds like the entire school's under siege. I guess some of the nerds didn't like the idea of being invaded and decided to put up enough of a fight that the aliens are taking notice. Or maybe they were having one of those protests they're always doing, and the pale freaks thought it was a threat. Whatever happened, shit's definitely going down on campus. Normally, I'd cut across the university at 116th Street to get to the train, but that's obviously not happening. Taking out a few pale-faced dudes in the park is one thing, but I'm not going to test my luck by trying to face off against a spaceship. I doubt I'm that strong. Besides, I don't even know how I got these powers, much less how long they'll last, and I don't want to use them all up when I've still got to get across the whole damn city. So I take a quick left and head down Amsterdam. There are people everywhere, mostly running, some who look injured. No one seems to know where to go or what to do. My legs keep moving, and it's a few more blocks before I realize where I'm leading us. The Big Crab. Or, more specifically, the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. I stop at the bottom of the steps leading up to the church and turn to the group behind me, the kids, old people, and a couple of wide-eyed teenagers around my age. There's a little pang in my side from running, but I'm in great shape compared to the others, who are wheezing. Inside, I say, nodding to the church. You'll be a lot safer in there than on the street.
Just wait until the army or marines or coast guard or whoever shows up and takes out all these pricks. They're probably marching across the bridges right now.
What are we supposed to do inside?
Flashlight Boy asks.
I don't know. This place is gigantic and like 100 years old.
There should be plenty of places to hide. Plus, it's a church, so, you know, it's probably extra protected or something. A couple of the elderly people who are hunched over and trying to catch their breath look so relieved that we've stopped that I think they might cry. Or maybe they're on the verge of tears because of everything that's going on around us. I don't know. Whatever the case, they start up the steps, glancing around and looking for any more aliens on the block. Three of the teenagers stand their ground, though. Flashlight Boy puffs out his chest.
Where are you going?
He asks. Downtown. That's where my mom's at.
You're gonna need help,
Flashlight Boy says.
I'm fast, and I can fight.
I catch him flexing his wiry arms a little, and in other circumstances I'd probably laugh at the fool. The others nod in agreement. One girl starts saying how much safer they'd be with me to protect them, while Flashlight Boy goes on about not wanting to sit around with nothing to do, just waiting for the demons from another planet to show up. And all I can think about is how with every second I waste here, Mom might be in more and more danger.
You want to see a demon?
I ask, shaking my head at them. Spend 5 more seconds standing here talking instead of getting inside. Flashlight Boy looks taken aback. He cocks his head to one side.
You can't stop us from coming.
My nostrils flare as I push my hand out to one side. At the top of the stairs, a big set of doors fly open with a bang, almost tearing off their hinges. I've got to be more careful with this whole mind power thing. My point gets made, though. They look back and forth between me and the doors for a few seconds, faces all twisted up in a mixture of confusion, fear, and something like awe.
Go, I say.
It sounds more like I'm begging them than commanding them.
I've got to go. I've wasted too much time as it is.
Thankfully, they trudge up the stairs. At the top, Flashlight Boy takes one look back.
Well, you better fuck all those aliens up, he says. Any of them come busting in here, and they'll be sorry.
I nod and turn away, cutting across the road. A few cars and a taxi whiz by me, but in the distance, farther down Amsterdam, I can see another alien ship landing. The cars are headed right for it, right into the arms of the aliens. My blood pumps faster. How many obstacles stand between my mom and me? I shake the thought from my head and focus on continuing to move. It's only then that I realize how truly messed up this must be for Flashlight Boy and the others. If their families made some kind of stand or distraction back at the apartments, there's a good chance they met the same fate as Benny. Or they were captured, which hell might even be worse for all I know. I'm just glad I have Mom to run to. Otherwise, what the hell would I even be doing right now? I turn off Amsterdam before I get to a bigger intersection. There are only 12 people on the street, but I see lots of faces in windows looking out with wide eyes. I try to think about what this means. If the MOGA dicks are at the university and hit my block in Harlem, maybe they're working their way down from the Bronx. They were in Midtown on the news, and I know they were at the UN. Maybe they haven't gotten down to the financial district. Halfway down the block, I hear a huge explosion from somewhere behind me. I look over my shoulder to see smoke rising from the area the church is in. I stop. My stomach cramps up. For a second, I think about running back. But I bury that idea in my head and start towards the train again, telling myself that it must have been a car getting bombed or one of those alien ships going down. The church is probably fine. I have to keep focused. I can't stop and help every person I see. Still, my heart's in my throat.
but it doesn't stay there. Instead, it drops to my guts when I come to a corner and see dozens of Mogadorians 4 or 5 blocks up the street. There are tons of police cars, too, their flashing lights reflected in the hulls of 2 spaceships hovering over the street. I can't tell if there was some kind of police resistance that retreated into campus, or if some kind of student revolt spilled out onto Broadway. Whatever's happening, the Moogs are fighting back with everything they've got. The ships fire into the crowds. There are exploding bottles being thrown by the students and a steady pop of gunshots. It's chaos. It's hard to even take my eyes off the crumbling buildings and the faces of the people fighting back. But I do. 100 feet in the other direction is a subway entrance at 110th. My goal. The trains still have to be operating, helping get people out of the city. Right? I practically slide down the stairs when I finally get to the entrance. For a second, I actually wonder if I have my Metro card on me. As if with everything that's going on, someone would try to stop me from hopping the turnstile. Only that's not a problem. Because the subway station is packed full of people. It's madness. If I were claustrophobic at all, it would be my worst nightmare. There have to be 100 men, women, and children between me and the turnstiles. A steady stream of panicked people leap over them, one by one, and jump down onto the tracks. They hold their cell phones out, using them as flashlights. Someone's opened up the emergency gate, and a high-pitched alarm squeals as people shove through it. What the hell? I wonder out loud. They're going to get run over down there. Oh, honey, a woman beside me says. She's got a handful of photos, and a small rat-looking dog pulled close to her chest. This train hasn't been running for hours. What are you talking about? I ask. The trains have to be running. Shit. The above-ground tracks are out at 125th, she says. The dog yaps. Bastards destroyed them. Not that I'm guessing any of the other trains are running now, either. Lord. I hope not if there are other people in the tunnels. My pulse is pounding so hard that nothing's computing in my brain. Before I can even formulate another question, someone runs into me, knocking me into the woman and causing her photos to fall to the ground. They're coming! It's a college-aged dude with blood running down his face. They're all moving this way! Go! Faster! Run!